weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, thanks to Lottie and Dave for driving us through the afternoon. It is Thursday, July 4th. I am Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, there's a full billing in the League of Ireland Men's Premier Division this evening. So Graham Gartland will be previewing all of tonight's matches alongside Rebecca Cray. We'll also look forward to a big weekend of League of Ireland Women's Premier Division action. Action, I should say. I'm getting too excited. The League of Ireland is back. We'll hear from Ireland head coach Andy Farrell, who today named his starting 15 for Saturday's test against the Springboks. Neil Tracy is there for us, and we'll have the latest from South Africa. Shane Stokes brings us up to date with a photo finish end to Stage 6 of the Tour de France. And Jeff Shepherd has his eye on all things America. As always, if you want to have your say, you can send us a text on 51552, WhatsApp the show on 087 187 9200, or you can find us on X at 2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Good evening. Welcome along to the show. As I mentioned, Graham Gartland and Rebecca Cray are already in studio. We're not even chatting football yet. You've popped in, Rebecca. Nice and early. How's things?
Yeah, all good, Shane. Thanks for having me.
Good. Graham, I couldn't even get through my intro. I was that excited that League of Ireland full billing on a Thursday. It's a bit strange, but something great to look forward to.
It is indeed, yeah. There's some big games coming up. Derry and Shells are about away from home as well. Rovers are looking to get back on track at home to Dundalk. Pats go down to Waterford. Then you have Galway Bows. So yeah, really good fixtures to look forward to.
We will be detailing them or previewing them in detail. How are you, by the way?
I'm good.
Skip that
I'm
one
good.
Well.
Yeah, no, good. I'm good. Yeah. Busy, good. But good.
Good. That's a good complaint to have. News headlines. We will be getting stuck into our football chat shortly. We've rugby and cycling to get through first before that. But Shane Ryan will make history in Paris later this month when he becomes the first Irish male swimmer to compete in 3 Olympic Games. Ryan has been chosen to swim the freestyle leg in the men's medley relay squad alongside Conor Ferguson, Dara Green and Max McCusker. Ireland will have 12 swimmers in Paris in total and will also send 2 women's relay squad, a 4x100 medley and freestyle. The women's medley squad at the moment is Danielle Hill, Mona McSherry and Ellen Walsh, with the freestyle leg to be decided after the 4x100 freestyle relay, which comprises of Danielle Hill, Victoria Catterson, Erin O'Riordan and Grace Davidson. Ireland's top individual hopes rest on Daniel Whiffen, who was competing in the 400, 800 and 1500 metres freestyle, and Mona McSherry, who made the final of the women's 100 metres breaststroke in Tokyo 3 years ago. McSherry has qualified for both the 100 and 200 metres breaststroke. Swim Ireland will also send diver Kira McGing to Paris, who will compete in the 10 metre platform, while Jake Passmore takes part in the 3 metre springboard event. Ireland swimmers and divers will go into camp at the National Aquatic Centre in Dublin on July 17th, ahead of their departure for Paris. In racing, City of Troy faces 7 rivals as he shoots for further Group 1 gold in Saturday's Coral Eclipse at Sandown. Aidan O'Brien's charge disappointed on his initial run this term when well beaten in the 2000 guineas before roaring back to form with a 2¾ length verdict in the Derby last month. He is long odds on to strike over 10 furlongs for the first time in this weekend highlight, with stablemate and outsider Hans Andersen joining him on the trip to Esher. As expected, White Birch was not declared, with O'Brien's Continuous and Luxembourg the others to miss out from an initial entry of 11. Time to chat cycling. Shane Stokes of the Velo website joins us now. Before we chat to Shane, let us hear the dramatic end to Stage 6 of the Tour de France.
Big news here for Van der Poel. Is he going to make it count around the outside, coming at pace here? Yes, for Philipsen comes and takes over. William Gouvet comes up through the centre. To Lee in the middle here as well. Oh, this is phenomenal, with Tamar also involved. Groenewegen on the line. Brilliant work. Oh, he had to be absolutely where he wanted to be. That was a piece of class. Hard fought till the very last day.
Well, Shane, we had a dramatic end yesterday to Stage 5, and I think today it beat it, didn't it?
It was again chaotic, and the rider who crossed the line second, Jasper Philipsen, was actually relegated there's a rule in sprinting where you cannot deviate from your line, so you must sprint in a straight line, and for the second day running he deviated from his line and was chucked out by the referees, not chucked out of the tour, but relegated to last in the bunch. So yeah, Dylan Groenewegen wins, and Binyam Girmay, who was the first black African to win a stage of the tour earlier in the race, was given second place after having crossed the line third. So yeah, very dramatic, and it just shows in sprinting, like, there's it's very, very dangerous, and anybody that starts waving all over the place in terms of their position, and they endanger all the other riders. So he was rightly punished for that.
Mm. And it wasn't just a dramatic finish, because Tadej Pogacar briefly was isolated as crosswinds caused a split in the peloton, and Jonas Vingegaard survived a bit of a scare as well.
That's right, yeah. And that's one of the dangers, even on stages that look otherwise... going by the profile of the stages, look like they should be harmless. Once the crosswinds happen, it's really easy for splits to happen in the bunch. And once a split happens in a crosswind, it just grows and grows. So Pogacar was isolated from his team, and that may give encouragement to Vingegaard's team in the days ahead to try something again. It doesn't happen terribly often that you've got crosswinds in the Tour, because it just depends on very open terrain and on the wind being in the right direction. But certainly the race has been changed in the past by crosswinds, and it just takes one stage to cause chaos. So I think Pogacar will be relieved by how things turned out, but he's also going to be wary for the rest of the race.
And yesterday, of course, Mark Cavendish made history. Just 24 hours later, he found himself too far back to really contest the sprint, am I right in saying?
Yeah, that's right. And the same thing happened to Sam Bennett, Ireland's one of two Irish riders in the race. So both he and Mark Cavendish just ended up quite a chaotic sprint. And you can just see what a difference, or how important placing is, because Mark Cavendish won well yesterday and was only 19th today. Sam Bennett's lead out man was 20th, and Sam was only 24th. And had things gone to plan, Sam would absolutely be, well inside the top 10, going for the win. And he should absolutely have finished ahead of his lead out man. It just seemed to happen inside the last probably 400 metres, where a rider came across Sam and he got separated. And there was a slight hesitation. I've seen that a few times from Sam this year, where things get a little bit hairy and he backs off. And I think that's the difference with confidence. Like, when a rider has confidence of a win, it just gives them that little edge when things get a bit hairy. But in Sam's defence, yesterday's sprint, if you go back and watch it, in the last 200 metres, he nearly crashed about three times trying to get through because it was so chaotic. And I think he's just a little bit wary, but he will absolutely be disappointed with today and will want to try and turn things around again in the coming days.
How will that affect him? How will that disappointment affect him going forward in this event in particular now, do you think?
As I spoke to Sean Kelly last week, and he said when Sam is not going well, he doesn't go well. But when Sam does go well, things really, really click, and it's all down to confidence. So Sam can get momentum from winning, but equally he can get discouraged when things don't go his way. So I think it is very important. This is the third sprint of this year's Tour out of a possible 8 sprints. I think it's really important for Sam that he, in the next sprint, whenever that is, and it could be, any one of the stage 8, stage 9, stage 10, depending on how they play out, those stages. But I think it's very important for him to finish a lot close to the front, because he is so governed by morale and he does need a morale boost at this point.
Okay, before I let you go, Shane, what does tomorrow hold for us in the Tour?
Tomorrow's a really important stage, because it's the first of two time trials in the race. And it's absolutely going to shape the race. Last year, Tadej Pogacar lost a lot of time to Jonas Vingegaard in one of the time trials. And if he can take time out of Vingegaard tomorrow, it'll be a huge psychological blow to Vingegaard. Equally, if Vingegaard can reduce some of his deficit to Pogacar, then that will be part of the mind games as well. But you look for Remco Evenepoel as well, who is world champion, and Primoz Roglic as two other riders who could ride very well in the time trial. So yeah, we already got an indication of form in the mountain stage earlier this week, and the time trial will absolutely be another indication, and will be a good predictor for what will happen in the couple of weeks ahead.
Okay, great stuff. Shane Stokes of the Velo website, thanks so much for taking the call today, and indeed all week. We'll check in again with you tomorrow.
Game on. Rugby.
Now, Andy Farrell has made a bold call in his side for Saturday's first test against South Africa in Pretoria, handing Leinster's Jamie Osborne his debut at fullback for the meeting with the world champions. Before we check in with Neil Tracy, who is in South Africa for us, let us hear from the Ireland head coach, Andy Farrell, on that big decision.
First of all, congratulations to Jamie and his family. As always, it's a privilege for us to be able to name somebody in the starting line for the debut, especially with an occasion like this. So congratulations to Jamie, and we'll celebrate that tonight with him, and hopefully we'll do him proud on Saturday as well. But as far as Jamie as a player is concerned, never mind a fullback, this has been in the pipeline for quite some time now in regards to Jamie's been in and out of the squad, obviously as a development player, but also he's been picked in squads before and been unfortunate to be injured, hence in the Rugby World Cup training squad he got injured pretty early, and you know we was gutted for him there. But when Jamie's been into the squad on numerous occasions, he's always filled in for us in all sorts of different positions, certainly at fullback as well as centre, etc. But anyone who knows Jamie as a rugby player and his background as a junior coming through, a lot of it's been in the 15 jersey. But it's just his skill set that is very interesting for us to see how we use the skill set that he's got. He's obviously gonna add to our performance, because what I've seen certainly lately to the back end of the URC season is that whenever he plays, he's got presence. It doesn't matter what position he plays. He suits the way that we play. He's bright. He gets himself on the ball a lot in an organising way. He's very good. His communication's good and it's accurate. He's obviously got nice soft hands and can play that way, but also he can hit a line as well. To add to that, he's deceptively very quick, good in the air, very athletic, and he's got a big left boot on him as well.
So that was Ireland head coach Andy Farrell speaking earlier today. As I mentioned, Neil Tracy of RTE Sport is in South Africa for us and joins us live on the line now. Neil, before I get your thoughts on that big call made by Andy Farrell and the rest of the team selection, how is South Africa? Is anticipation building for this big test on Saturday?
It certainly is, Shane. Evening. Yeah, it's been certainly the last couple of days you can really actually start to feel the excitement about everything pick up. I would say since Tuesday afternoon when Razzie Erasmus gave his press conference over in Pretoria, that's when everything felt like it was starting to really ramp up. He certainly upped the ante. He kind of has himself, he's positioned himself as, I suppose, as this like chief mischief maker in world rugby. And after tweeting out what he thought the Ireland team was going to be last Saturday, which was just tremendous fun altogether, and that just kind of stoked the flames a little bit. And then he was at his press conference on Tuesday where he was in rare form, I think, even for Razzie Erasmus. He was cracking jokes left, right and centre. He was just kind of lobbying a few verbal hand grenades out there. And then yesterday evening when the word filtered through that Jamie Osborne was more than likely going to be named in the starting 15. And then this afternoon when Andy Farrell came out, and now it just feels like, you know, test week is very much here. We're looking forward to getting down to Pretoria, about 40 minutes up the road. We're in Johannesburg at the moment, and yeah, it feels like the test week has really arrived.
Okay, well, the big news that you mentioned there and we heard Andy Farrell talk about, firstly, how big of a shock did this come to you, and secondly, how big of a risk is it?
For the first part, it absolutely came as a shock pretty much to everyone, because if I look back at all the coverage we've had over the last couple of months, ever since we learned that Hugo Keenan was going to be unavailable for this tour due to the sevens, Jamie Osborne's name has not been mentioned as a potential candidate to play at fullback in this test series, because you had Jimmy O'Brien, who was probably the favourite to get in there. He has credit in the bank with Andy Farrell after playing well last season. He performed really, really well for Leinster at fullback towards the tail end of this season. Then Jordan Larmour was also an option. He was probably the incumbent, having started at fullback when Hugo Keenan got injured ahead of the final game of the Six Nations. And then you also have Kieran Frawley, who's been used at fullback by Ireland in the Six Nations, who's covered there for Leinster as well. And now he probably was more likely to be the sub out half, but there were three, maybe even four, if you want to include someone like Jacob Stockdale in there, four options ahead of what we thought Jamie Osborne was going to be as a fullback. Because even though Osborne has played, he played on that fullback for Ireland at under 20s level, in his senior career, he's only started two games for Leinster in the 15 shirt. He's played 48 matches for Leinster. Only two of those have been at fullback. I would say 90-95% of his appearances for Leinster have been in the centre. And the last time he did play fullback was more than 18 months ago. So absolutely, it came out of the blue. The second part of that question, is it a risk? It's 100% a risk. And Andy Farrell said so as well. But in fairness, he did lay out the logic behind why he thinks it makes sense to have Jamie Osborne in there, because he's physically a very, very powerful player. And another big thing as well that's going to come into the equation on Saturday, he's got a really, really powerful left boot. Left foots are a hot commodity in rugby just because it helps you with your exit strategy and you can balance off your left and right footed kickers. And then also Loftus-Versfeld up at altitude, if he can help Ireland exit out of the 22 when they're under pressure at altitude, he can get a lot of distance on those kicks. So there is a risk, but there's plenty of reward there as well.
Okay, so Jamie Osborne on debut is one of two changes to Andy Farrell's side from their most recent international, a 17-13 win against Scotland in the final round of the Six Nations in March. The other change sees Craig Casey get the nod over Conor Murray at scrum half, replacing the injured Jemison Gibson-Park. Is this the right decision, in your opinion, Neil?
I think it probably is. It's the decision I think a lot of people probably did want to see. And it's nothing against Conor Murray, but if you look at Craig Casey's development over the last few years, he's been involved in Ireland squad since 2021. He's played, this is going to be his 15th cap this weekend. But the vast majority of his games have been in, without disrespecting them, against some of the smaller nations in the Six Nations or in World Rugby. He's started four games before for Ireland. Three of those were against Italy and one is against USA. And for a player who's kind of at this stage of his career, it kind of needed to be now or never to see if he does have what it takes to start and, you know, run the Irish attack alongside Jack Crowley in a real white-hot atmosphere. Because he hasn't done it yet, but he hasn't had the chance to do it yet. And I think also then as well, if you look at what Ireland lose with Jamison Gibson-Park out, Craig Casey is probably the more like-for-like replacement in terms of his style of play. He's very fast, very nippy, he likes to play the game at pace, quite similar to Gibson-Park. And if he can play well and get Ireland into a good position into the second half, that's when you have the option of bringing on Conor Murray, who, as we all know, is an excellent game manager and can use that experience and probably control the pace of the game that Ireland will want.
Another somewhat double barrel question for you, Neil. When you look at the rest of the starting 15 and indeed the replacements, is it as expected or are there anything that stands out where you expecting them to go with a 6-2 or 5-2 split in the bench and so on?
No, not particularly. There aren't any real surprises. The only other selection that probably jumps out would have been Robbie Henshaw selected over Gary Ringrose. I think a lot of people were expecting Ringrose to go straight back in there alongside Bundiaki, but it's far from a controversial call because Gary Ringrose has only played twice since the end of January. One of those was off the bench in a Six Nations game, and then he only got one game back for Leinster before coming into this camp. So he is a little bit rusty in terms of his match minutes, and Robbie Henshaw and Bundiaki are a very, very established centre pairing. In terms of the bench split, I think the further we got into this week, the general consensus was that 5-3 was probably just a better option, particularly if you were choosing between Gary Ringrose or Robbie Henshaw. It would have been a big call to leave one of those players out of the match day 23 altogether. And I think if you were to look at the depth Ireland have in their forwards and in their backs, outside of that starting 15, they have more impact players to bring on in the back line as opposed to the forwards. So I think if Andy Farrell was to be going with a 6-2 split for this game, it possibly would have been just for the sake of going with a 6-2 split, because you would have had to leave out either Gary Ringrose or Robbie Henshaw, whichever one of those didn't start in the centre with Bundiaki. And either one of those players are certainly going to have an impact off the bench this weekend.
Okay. Before I do let you go, Neil, South Africa are heavy favourites to win, perhaps even heavier favourites now in some circles when the news that Jamie Osborne was starting at 15. Hopefully it does go well for Jamie Osborne. Hopefully it does go well for Ireland. Do you think it will be a closer contest than some are predicting, Neil?
I do. I would be leaning towards South Africa, but I do think Ireland rarely get blown out by teams. It's certainly hard to remember a time that Ireland really, really got a stuffing against the side. And South Africa, they're the sort of team that even if they do hammer you, they don't necessarily do it on the scoreboard. They could beat a team by 12 points, but it could be a 12-point hammering, if you know what I mean. Just because of the way they play, they could physically wear you down, but they don't necessarily run in 8-9 tries like we might see Leinster doing in a United Rugby Championship game where they rack up big scores. It's entirely possible that South Africa win very, very comfortably, but not necessarily comfortably on the scoreboard. I'd be just about leaning South Africa by a try, give or take, would be gun to my head what I'd be predicting right now.
Okay, good stuff. Neil Tracy, thanks so much for taking the call live from South Africa. There will be a live commentary of South Africa versus Ireland on RTE Radio 1 Saturday Sport. But for now, Neil, thank you so much. Before we do take a break, just sticking with rugby, Ireland produced a stunning 25-phase move in the final play of the game to keep their semi-final hopes alive in the World Rugby Under 20 Championship with a dramatic winning try in the 83rd minute in South Africa. Georgia seemed poised for a shock win when they led 16-15 as the clock ticked past 80 minutes, but Willie Falloon's men did not panic and worked the ball from their own half before replacement winger Finn Tracy got over it in the left corner after the cover had been sucked infield, dealing with the constant barrages from a desperate Ireland side, who eventually won by 22 points to 16. Graeme Gartland and Rebecca Cray are patiently waiting to chat football. Stick with us here in Game On. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Game On.
Football.
Now, we are chatting League of Ireland Men's Premier Division, League of Ireland Women's Premier Division. We might even look ahead at the Euros tomorrow as well. Lots to get through. Erik ten Hag extends his deal with Manchester United. It's a busy day of football. So, Graeme Gartland and Rebecca Cray. Graeme and Becca, let us start with the Men's Premier Division because that is on this evening before we look ahead to the weekend's fixtures. So, as you mentioned at the top there, Graeme, we have league leader Shells going up the M1 to Drogheda. Derry are away to Sligo Rovers. Shamrock Rovers host Dundalk. Waterford host St. Pat's, and Bows are heading out west to Galway United. It's a bit of a strange one because the transfer window is open now. Few teams have added a couple of players. Some teams have lost players. Loan deals have become permanent and so on and so forth. And last Friday's games, they did have a major impact on the league table as a whole, with Shells and Derry recording wins and Rovers dropping off again a little bit. Are we down to it? Can we call it a two-horse race now, or is that a bit too early still, given Shamrock Rovers' experience and the players that are coming back?
That's the thing. It's very hard to write them off when you consider that they've won the last four league trophies, and they've won them probably quite easily too. By I think 10 points, 7 was probably the smallest gap, 7 or 8. So it's very hard to write them off when they have all that experience and quality. The couple of things, they haven't been able to get that quality on the pitch enough this season. And they haven't been able to go on a run or find any rhythm to that game. Hmm. So that's the worry from a Rovers point of view, is how quick can they pick up that rhythm to try and challenge. I don't know if they can pick it up in the next 13 games enough.
With Europe as well.
And then I can't see Shells dropping off. So I think a lot of the talk sometimes is about what Rovers aren't doing. And then like anything, the managers can be a bit like, well, it's, you know, Rovers are four league titles in a row, they're judged off that. But what Shells and Derry are doing this year has been excellent, particularly Shells, considering from where they've come from. Mm. I think Beck would agree. They're putting stuff in around it, they're getting their training base a bit better out in the AUL, all them things. But to go from, I think, three years ago, they lost 4-0 in the cup final to Derry, two cup finals ago, to go to the point where they're now top of Derry by 2 points with a game in hand just shows the turnaround. So I know it's easy to turn around and point at Rovers and say, well, they're four times defending champions and they might be out of race, but let's go and actually praise Shells and Derry here for the fact that they're sitting first and second in the league, and throw in Waterford in that as well, because they've had a fantastic season. So yeah, I do think I feel it is a two-horse race for that point of view, because Derry and Shells are doing so well, and I just don't think Rovers will have enough time to find the rhythm and a momentum to put a run together to challenge.
Looking at who Shelburne have brought in, Harry Wood, permanent long-term deal from Hull City. Of course, he was at the club on loan before. Ali Coote, Sam Bone coming in to the club as well. Shane Farrell has departed. Jad Hikiki, Lewis Temple's gone out on loan to Wexford as well. Do they have the depth in the squad to continue this? And also, they mightn't have the experience of winning things in terms of a Premier Division title or a cup for many years, but they seem a lot more experienced, particularly from that cup final you mentioned. I think Damien even said that some of his decisions he would do completely different now if it was to happen again.
Yeah, and that's what comes with being in these big games, that you learn from them. The loss, Gavin Molloy, which I think would be a big loss. Yeah. He probably would have been up there as he'd be in the team of the year if you were putting it together now. I think he'd be in the team of the year, so he'd be a big loss for them. They've brought in people that know the league. They've let go a couple of players that probably don't fit into what they're trying to do. Obviously, the previous stuff that went on with Shane Farrell, the other lads that have moved on.
Fringe players,
yeah,
to be
exactly.
Fair.
So they've moved people on and brought in a little bit more experience. So it's good business as well. Coote, we've seen at Bowes, especially to start the last season when Bowes were sitting top of the league, he was excellent. He was one of the outstanding players for the first 3 or 4 months of the season last year. And I know he tails off. Damien will believe, as any good coach does, ultimate belief in himself that put him in air environment where air demands, he's going to be a better player. And that's what they're hoping. There was a game that I think we done for RTE when they went, Bowes went to Tolka and they nicked the goal just after half time, and Shell sort of stuttered a bit to break them down, and I felt they needed somebody who was going to be creative like that. So I think it's a really good signing for them. Sam Bowen, who would know the league, played with Dundalk, played with Rovers as well, played at Waterford. Again, he's steady Eddie for them. He's experienced. He's just going to come in, do his job. Joey would have worked for him and played for him as well. Joey O'Brien would have worked for him and played for him as well. So they're astute signings that will, like you said, get them over the line. Winning when you're expected to win is the toughest thing, I think. I think as an underdog, you can have a good day, things can go right for you. But winning when you're expected to win is a tougher task, because you have to be on it every week, because you know the opposition are bringing their best and bringing their maximum effort to the game too. So becoming favourites, you know, they have to handle that, and that's a mental thing. But again, look at Damien and Joey O'Brien's experience. I'm sure they've been through before. In fact, Damien probably would have been through going from challenging with Chelsea under Ranieri to then winning the league with Mourinho, and that change of mindset to go, well, people are treating us different when they come to the game. They might just sit in and let you have it. You have to, if the onus is on you as the team who's chasing the league, you have to go and break them down and win the game.
I think that's very fair comparison as well, and that's probably when Shells looked weak when they tried to control the game, and perhaps last Friday against Galway was the first time in a while that it was a full 90 minute performance that they didn't. You mentioned the pressure when sides are expected to win. Drogheda have won just one game in 11 matches, so Shells will certainly be expected to win, but it will be tough travelling up the M1 to Drogheda this evening. It's going to be tough for Derry heading out to Sligo. Just to mention, there are official celebrations of the life of Tommy Gorman. I know he was marked at the last match, but I believe this evening is the official celebrations of Tommy, a great servant to Sligo Rovers and a great colleague to all of us here at RTE as well. Sligo, they're hit and miss. Derry, again, you would expect Derry to win, and they're coming good, and they're challenging for a title. They've Europe to come as well, similar to Shelburne. But it's always a difficult place, as cliched as it is, to play Sligo Rovers in Sligo.
Derry have found it tough. I think they lost 1-0 last year. Rovers had drawn with UCD, and I think Derry had gone, if they had a beaten Sligo in that game, it would have put them right back in the title race, and they went there and lost 1-0. So they probably, it's not the best of grounds for Derry sometimes. Sligo beat Rovers last week 2-0. Simon Power scored 2 goals, and I think he's probably been the one they've missed. I know Mata came back. They re-signed Ed McGuinty in goal, which is a massive signing for them. But Power's the one that, if you can keep him fit, he just has pace. And pace at any level hurts you. And we've seen that with the goal he scores last week. They come out to confront him. He goes by them, scores. He picks her up again. They don't come out to confront him, and he shoots and scores. So that's what pace does. It can bring that fear. And if you overcommit, he'll go by you. But Derry, the top goal scorers in the division.
What impressed you most about their style of play, even?
Do you know what? Like the wingers, I really like McMullen. They brought McMullen in from Dundee. He just got promoted with them in the Championship. They had won the league over there, and I really liked him. I just think he's really direct. He's always fit and ready to play. Mullen, who they brought in, he was at St Mirren, he's been good as well. Patching in midfield is good. So they have a level of control in the midfield that they don't really panic on the ball, and they suffocate teams with that. I do feel they've lost McJanet as well, and I think they'll miss him. I always felt Derry needed just a little bit of extra mobility in the back line at times. Now Maher is really good off his line, he's quick, so that negates that some a little bit. But I just would like to see them have a little bit more mobility in the middle of the middle of the back line, for if and when they come up against a little bit more trickier opponents. We saw what Rovers done to them earlier with runners down the side, but they seem to have solved that, and they have a goal scorer in Hooban now. So for all that control they get midfield and the possession they have and the wingers that will get to the boy line, they have somebody on the end of it to score them, which they probably really lacked last season.
And Colin Whelan coming back as well. Correct. After playing very little football for a while. Jacob Davenport is a permanent signing for Derry City. Diallo and Dumigan coming back, making strong contributions as well. Shamrock Rovers then, and Beck, I might bring you into the conversation of when a team is successful for so long, and perhaps this has been labelled at teams you may be involved with in the past, not just with Shells or Raheny or whoever, there is a bit of fatigue in keeping that going. And do you think Shamrock Rovers have somewhat suffered that perhaps?
Possibly, yeah. Look, it does come to a bit of a plateau, you know, and you've won so much and you've gone so many years, you know, consecutively winning leagues, cups, whatever it may be. And, you know, sometimes there can be a lack of motivation, whether it's staff, players, you know, that can feed through, obviously, as well. Or from obviously higher again, yeah, at the club. So, yeah, look, it looks like there's just been a bit of a kind of a lacklustre about them. You know, they've not been, you know, firing all cylinders like they usually were or have been in recent years or previous years. But look, it's just a case of, you know, maybe getting more bodies in, you know, in this window. I don't know if they will or not, but they seem to be just a little bit off the boil, yeah, in recent games.
Is there anything that you can put your finger on that they need to do to turn things around in particular? Is there anything that's just not clicking at the moment that you spotted that perhaps, oh, maybe this should happen or that should happen?
It's hard because it's their job as pundit or observers really to comment on other teams, and you can get caught up in it a little bit. Mentally they look a little bit fatigued. I think the push to get forward in a row and match the great forward in a row of the 80s can get to you, because the relief of chasing something for so long that you're so close to it, and then getting over that line, that sense of relaxation kicks in where you're like, oh, we've finally done it. But then to go again, it'd be tough. They haven't had a settled back three. The keeper's come in, and even though he had a good spell last year, he's probably been indifferent. And I like him. I think he makes good saves, but I think he makes saves that you expect him to make. But I think there's ones that he should be saving that he's not. The back line hasn't been settled. Clearly he's been injured. Grace has been injured. So they haven't had that back three that would normally be their strong point. So people think Rovers' pace and power is actually in their back line. The quickest players are in the back line. Ferrugia, Trevor Clark would all be in the back line. So that they can suffocate teams. And any time a team then is deep and thinks, oh, we'll catch them on the counter, they just get eaten up with their pace. Gary O'Neill has been a massive loss because he's the one that pulls them all together. But he's also the one that people realise he protects the back three as well and screens it and stops balls going into the striker. But what he is a safety valve for the back three when they're in trouble, that he'd collect the ball when they're in trouble. So he gives them an outlet. And then it's his next pass. What I always find when Rovers were at their best was when Gary was punching passes through to Bourke and Bourne on the other side of that midfield, of the opposition midfield, and then they're away. Then they're in at the back line. And when you have that talent in at somebody else's back line, generally it's going to cause you trouble. They haven't been able to do that because O'Neill hasn't been fit. I think that was his first game in 11. And they haven't had probably a direct replacement that will do that to him. So what happens is Graham Bourke becomes starved, the players at the top end of the pitch become starved, and then they start dropping to collect the ball, and they come deeper, and the deeper they go, the opposition is going, great, you're as far away from air goal, you're not causing trouble, you can go there and get it, you're not going to hurt us. So that's where I think they can, if they can get Gary back and keep him fit, they need to get McInniff fit in that position, Jack back fit, and then it's like, look lads, stay higher, stay away from the ball, we're going to feed it into you, and then our wing-backs are going to gallop. But you just haven't been able to get that control in the game, Shane.
Well, Sean Hoare, Aaron McInniff, Trevor Clark and Jack Byrne did make their return to the showgrounds last week. Still probably not 100% match fit. Dara Burns, Dan Cleary will be able to feature tonight. Lee Grace, Neil Ferrugia and Sean Kavanagh are back in training at least. Roy Gaffney remains on the sidelines for a few more weeks.
He's been a big loss as well.
Roy Gaffney,
because he just gives them a platform to play into. So if the... again, that got ball from Gary O'Neill. If it's going, if a team does squeeze up against you and they want to go straight into the striker, just miss out the press in midfield, he's able to hold the ball up, and then they're setting it back to the likes of Bourke and Bourne. So they're missing them out in the original pass, but Gaffney's the one that holds the ball up and brings them into play. He's been like, he's been Rovers' best player for the last two or three seasons, and I think they really missed him too.
Just from a Dundalk point of view, Zach Johnson, I should say, plays his final game for Dundalk. Dundalk will be scrapping for points near the foot of the table in ninth place, so it won't be easy for Shamrock Rovers this evening. Waterford surprised many people. They're in third position at the moment. St. Pat's now somewhat rejuvenated under Stephen Kenny. Nil-all draw against Bowes last weekend. A couple of signings, Alamin Kazim, permanent from Colchester, most recently on loan at Galway. The fullback Marcelo Pitaluga ended his loan at Pats.
He returns, the goalkeeper, wasn't he?
To Liverpool, yeah. And bringing Nyang back to the club is a huge signing for Pats, to be fair, I think, as well. So it'll be a different St. Pats post-transfer window, you would imagine.
Yeah, I know they got a nil-all draw against Bowes last week, and they started the game okay, and then the game sort of fizzled out. But they need a cover at left back. Kazim, I think, has been probably one of Galway's better players this year. That'd be a loss for them. They did need a goalkeeper, and it's always good to bring back a goalkeeper that knows your club and knows the way it works. So that's a really good signing for them. Probably the best failed goalkeeper they could get. Yeah. So it's in that sense, it's a good signing. Pats just need to gather momentum to go into on a cup run, to go into Europe that they have next week. And then if they can gather that towards the end of the season, then they're all eyes are on going, let's see what we can do next year. But they needed more depth, and they've added that with Kazim. He might end up playing left side of centre back, and Breslin might play, although Gravoski's back and he's been a big miss for them. But yeah, look, Waterford probably deserve all the plaudits for what they've done. I saw them in the playoff last year and I thought they might struggle, but
can they maintain this one?
I think they can, because they've legs in midfield. McMenemy can run. They've a lad that they brought in from Man City, he's been excellent, he can run as well,
and they've a goal scorer.
Yeah, Patterson. Padraig Amon's probably been the sign of the season for me. He's been excellent, he's a great example for all the players around him, and I think the Waterford lads actually buy into him as well, that they listen to him. Asamoah was a brilliant signing from Fleetwood. They're hoping to hold on to him, but I think he got injured. So he's a loss, but we've seen what Patterson can do with the goal, the first goal up in Dundalk, where he collects the ball in his own half, and by the time he's playing a true ball, he's 20 yards inside Dundalk's half, and that's what that pace and power will give you, will carry you up the pitch. And I think they have the legs. Again, there's going to be games, for some reason, any time they come up against Derry, they struggle. Derry just have this thing over them, and every other team they go and do really well against. Yeah. And it's like, the games can go either way, but they're there on merit. That's where the league is. You know, they're on 20, they play 22 games and on 34 points. It's a massive return. I know they've lost 8, which is the most out of the top 5, but again, they've only drawn 4, so it just shows you actually they go out to try and win football matches, which is brilliant, and that's why they're where they are.
And a very good manager, Keith Long, who certainly knows the league. Finally then, Galway disappointed last week. They play Bowes in Eamon DC Park. Junior Ogede Uzogwe, permanent signing from Glentoran, 30 years of age now, the League One top goal scorer in 2019, I think it was. Bowes, Lee Kavanagh, young defender looking to restart his career from Brian Archie Meekson from Dundee as well. Similar to Pats, Bowes, they're 8 in the table at the moment. Yes, they've got a few games in hand over Sligo and indeed over Pats as well. You would imagine they will look a lot different post-transfer window as well, but they're coming up against a Galway side similar to Waterford who've surprised people, and the cohesion, and they're difficult to beat and they're dogged as well.
Yeah, and they work for each other, that's the thing. They don't carry anybody in that team. I don't think there's anybody they could carry, they've been excellent. I've watched them twice, and you know, they'll dig in, they'll drop into a 4-5-1 when they have to. They change formation when they were 2-1 down up and draw, then ended up winning the game with 2 late goals. So he's willing to change it. He went to a 3-5-2 and got 2 strikers on up the pitch, and he ended up winning the game. So he will gamble now. It was probably 10 minutes to go when he gambled, but it worked. Bowes, Ross Tierney was come in as well, which I think would be a big signing for them again. Going back,
sorry, I can't believe I've left out Ross Tierney and Gav Malloy, two of the biggest names on the two clubs.
That's why
we're
here, Becky.
We're going to the experts.
That's why I asked the questions, Craig.
But yeah, like Ross will come in and give them legs in midfield and the driving force, and again use all his experience and the fact he's back at Bowes where he had such a successful period before. You're hoping it kicks on from their point of view. Galway needed probably another striker to come in. Walsh up front probably sometimes runs his race and he runs the channels and he battles and he fights and he runs it, but he keeps going, in fairness to him, but he probably needed help. And they needed to bring in quality and that help as well. I thought he would have been a bit more active, because I think they're in a really good position where if the Coma brothers, who are backing them, actually really wanted to back them and push them, they're in striking distance of getting into Europe, which, if you said to me the two promoted teams, if you said to anybody the two promoted teams next year they're going to be battling out to get into Europe, I don't think many people would have believed that.
No, it is great to have the competitiveness. Lots to look forward to this evening. Also, lots to look forward to this weekend. I'm going to keep the questions short and sweet, so don't have any glaring errors like in the men's permanent division chat. Saturday, Shells host Wexford at 2 o'clock, 3 p.m. Deal or Waves at Lone, 3 p.m. as well for Bowes and Galway. 5 o'clock, Rovers are on the road to Treaty United, and at 5 bells, Piemont United host Cork City. When you're looking at the table now, Galway were flying high. They weren't running away with it. We're only at the halfway point now, but it's Athlone top, Shells now just a point behind them as well, and Galway have fallen off a little bit. Their last time Shells were in action actually was a victory over Galway as well, so they'll be coming at this second half of the season raring to go, and they'll be looking for a big result in Daly Mount on Saturday.
Yeah, completely. I think they had a good run of it in the first, you know, 6-7 weeks of the league. You know, that you can kind of argue there was arguments going around that look, they may not have been put up to it as much, you know, as they might be against the likes of say Shells or Piemont or Wexford, whoever it might be, and you know, they seem to have had a little bit of a the likes that Jenna Slattery, you know, she wasn't as fresh as she was maybe in the first few games. Julianne Russell, obviously, and Lindsay McKee there. They're kind of the three main players that would kind of keep them ticking over, you know, and they just seem to, again, Shells just couldn't break them down. And look, credit to Shells as well in that previous game, you know, that defensively have done really well. I think conceded only two at this point, two or three. So I've done really well, but look, they'll be going to Daly Mount now looking to get back on the horse, as they say, and you know, obviously coming back off the back of a 1-0 win against Treaty as well, they'll be riding high.
We didn't mention it yesterday actually, when we were talking about the Irish squad that was announced by Eilean Gleeson. Julianne Russell returning to an Irish team at 33 years of age. It just shows the season she's having.
Yeah, look, she used to be a mainstay back in the day, you know, when I was in Nowa squad. She was fantastic, really, you know, real live wire of a player, and she's been fantastic for Galway this season, you know, coming off having a baby, you know, and getting straight back into it. I know she went away to Australia for a bit as well for work, so look, she looks as fit as ever, as I've ever seen her. I think she's really tough to play against, you know. I know Jess Gargan said she's quite tough to deal with, you know, quite fast, still at 33, and she'll get you goals as well. So great to see her back involved in the Irish setup, and obviously Niamh Fahey coming back from injury as well.
No, lots to look forward to. Ireland, of course, away to England hosting France, and we'll have live coverage of both of those matches here on Game On at 2FM next Friday and Tuesday week as well. Athlone Town, top of the table, so let's talk about them, their way to Deal or Waves. What's been clicking lately for Athlone? What's impressed you most?
Yeah, look, Athlone, I think for the last few years they've been in the league, I've just been that dogged team, you know, they're workhorses. They've got wing backs there that will run all day, and look, they're scoring goals. I think the likes of Maddie Gibson, she's not started the last few games, but she's come in, you know, later into the game and has somewhat changed at times. Chloe Singleton just can't stop scoring. I see she's up for player of the month as well this month. So yeah, it just seems to be a case of, look, they've got those workhorses in the team, but they also have that level of quality to win them games as well up top.
How big of a threat will Wexford pose to Shells, considering they've lost a few players, Wexford?
Yeah, I think they've lost about four players that I've seen. Two that stand out to me is the likes of Freya DeMange, who's a young girl that's actually done really well at the club. I think she scored in her last game and Emily Corbett as well, who was brought in as this, you know, goal scorer number nine. Obviously, Rhianna Gerrard was out injured for a period of time and seems to be now, yeah, moving on. I think Emily may be going to college up here.
Okay.
So that could be influencing that move.
Not confirmed where she might end up.
No, no.
It might be in the Talla region.
Possibly.
We're not sure.
Who knows?
It's only a rumour, Becca.
You just hear these things now and again. But yeah, I don't know. Look, it could be completely over the other side of the country. Who knows? But Wexford are never, you know, a team to be sniffed at. They've done really well coming back on this kind of halfway point of the season, you could call it. They didn't have the best of starts, but now Rhianna Gerrard is back involved after having a, you know, bad injury with her knee. Ella Malloy, we played them actually in a friendly game last week. Ella Malloy is just unplayable at times, you know, so it's quite scary to see they're gaining momentum now, and you know, the likes of Ciara Rossiter, Kylie Murphy is in there as well. So they'll be coming to Talca Park this weekend, looking to get 3 points, no doubt. And they always do seem to, no matter how bad they're playing in other games, they seem to put it up to Shells every single game they play against them. So yeah,
should be a cracker. So in Talca, two teams then that probably would wish they are higher up the table, Shamrock Rovers and Piemont. Rovers away the Treaty, Piemont at home to Cork City as well. Only two league wins for Rovers, which is, it's hard to believe, to be fair, considering the players they have. It's been disappointing, the good performances, similar to Piemont as well, disappointing results at times, but again, good performances. They're just looking to get that bit of momentum and that consecutive wins under the belt.
Yeah, I think with Rovers, it's been a season of draws for them. You know, they just haven't seemed to be able to get over the line. Obviously recently they've come into a little bit of form. Given the squad, yeah, they have got a good start in 11, but I think with the likes of themselves and Piemont, they maybe lack that little bit of depth, you know, just having bodies come off the bench to kick on a game or change a game. They just seem to lack that slightly. They're relying on a lot of youth, you know, coming through at Rovers now. A lot of their underage girls are involved in the senior setup, which is great to see. Obviously, you want to see that development coming through, but sometimes it might be a little bit too early at that stage. But look, you know, they're still mid-table now. They may kick on now in the second half of the season. And same for Piemont. You know, they're still there or thereabouts, fourth. It's not maybe the kind of levels that they're used to. But
they're
still
certainly not far off it.
Exactly. You know, they still have the likes of Karen Duggan in there. You know, Erin McLaughlin obviously involved the Irish setup as well. And they're definitely not teams to, I think we say every season, but it's such a wide open league, you know. And I think this year, as cliche it is probably the most wide open that we've seen and the most competitive. So look, we won't complain. You're always getting a good game each weekend.
Long may it continue, both in the men's and women's Premier Division. We're going to have to leave a football chat there. We didn't get onto the Euros, but you know what, it's always good to have a good detailed League of Ireland chat. So Graham, Becca, thank you both very much for popping into the studio. We're taking a short break, and then Jeff Shepherd is dialing in with his eye on America. Jeff Shepherd joins us live from the USA on the 4th of July. Shep, it is great to chat to you. It's even better to chat to you.
What an incredible sentence, Shane. He joins us from America on the 4th of July. I mean, doesn't that just get the blood pumping?
I'm bluffing as a radio DJ here. I don't know what to be doing. I was like, there's music playing. I'm out of my comfort zone, Shep. Talk to me. Recover, Shep. Recover.
That's right. No, I, as always, happy to be here. Yes, it's you know, it's our Independence Day. I believe 248 years ago is when history officially began, as we like to say over here, you know?
Okay. That's like the way football began in 1991 when the Premier League was invented. Actually, speaking of football, the USA men's soccer team, they're not going great in the old Copa America at the moment, Shep.
Well, yes, because they're no longer participating in the chain.
I'm trying to be polite.
Sure, of course. Well, and look, I mean, you kind of have to start this discussion almost looking in the rearview mirror. 2 years ago at the World Cup in Qatar, we advance out of our group and get to the round of 16 and lose to the Netherlands. No shame in that. I mean, they're a much better program than we are. But, you know, you're looking to the future and you've got what they've called, you know, this golden era of American soccer players, because these are the best soccer players America's ever had. You know, I mean, these are kids that have their second, third generation removed from when we hosted the World Cup in the 90s. They've grown up with soccer. They've been playing. They may be better players, but they're not a better team than we've had in recent years. And so on Monday night, we lose 1-0 to Uruguay in the Copa America tournament and get eliminated. And immediately the speculation starts about, you know, the future of the team and the coach, and are they too comfortable? Is Greg Berhalter's, you know, style of play and style of leadership not what is needed at this time? And, you know, it was interesting to see, you know, the commentators on the broadcast are, you know, Alexi Lawless, who played on the in the 90s, Carly Lloyd, who won multiple, you know, World Cups with the women's team, and Clint Dempsey, who's probably had the most success out of any American international player. And they were all just completely flustered and frustrated and all in agreement that that change needs to be made at the top. Because in 2 years, America, Mexico, and Canada are co-hosting the World Cup. And so there's not a lot of time between now and then to get things fixed, if you can get them fixed. So it's been a week of speculation on the future of this program.
Okay. Listen, Shep, I'm going to do you a favour. I'm going to let you go and enjoy the celebrations of the 4th of July. We have ran out of road. We're going to just end the show with football like we were chatting about. But Shep, thanks so much for taking the call. Great chatting to you and a very happy 4th of July. That is all we have time for. Big thanks to Andrew O'Connor and Laura Lee Davis for working on this evening's show. Apologies to the news desk and Better the Silver. We're running a little over, but do stay tuned to 2FM. We'll be back at 6 o'clock tomorrow from all of the Game On team. It is bye for now.